You're an ice cream cone. You're a lollipop. You're a baby chick. You're a pogo stick. You're a magic trick. You're a spinning top. You're special.
Hello, neighbors. I won't dwell on the fact that this is the first podcast you're getting through the Neighborhood Archive in well over a year, and we'll just jump into the content itself. Longtime friend of the Neighborhood Archive, Guy Hutchinson, was a part of this year's Florida SuperCon, which took place at the end of July. And also part of this year's SuperCon was David Newell, who you might know better as Mr. McFeely. Now, Guy had the chance to have a conversation with Mr. Newell and was kind enough to have recorded this conversation to be shared with us here. So I hope you'll sit back and enjoy this conversation in this new episode of the Neighborhood Archive podcast.
For over 30 years, my guest was in front of the camera as the character of Mr. McFeely on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He also worked behind the scenes in the public relations department. He was honored this year by the Heinz History Center at the annual History Makers Award Dinner. He is the subject of the 2008 documentary Speedy Delivery. Everybody, Mr. David Newell.
To attend, that it's hard to get to everything, but what do? Sit down?
Yeah, pick a seat.
Which one are you going to sit on? That one?
I'll sit. You sit towards the middle, that way they can.
I'll sit over in this one, okay?
Yeah.
Well, you've got the.
I got the final episode right here.
Yeah, this. If you want to move over to the center here, since we're all. You can see better, okay. Okay. Well, my real name is David Newell, and this is my 50th year working on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. I mean, we started in 1967 taping the program, and I went on the air February 19th, 1968. I guess you all knew that, right? And next year will be the actual 50th anniversary on public television for the program, since we started taping in 67, but it didn't go on until 1968. Next year they're going to have some, first of all, they're making a documentary. I don't know if you knew this.
Oh, I don't know about this.
There's a documentary by the person who made a documentary called 20 Feet from Stardom. Have you heard of that documentary? Won an Oscar for Best Documentary last year. And it's about backup singers. It has a very clever title, 20 Feet from Stardom.
Okay.
And so that's... The filmmaker who did that is doing one on Fred Rogers, and I've been interviewed already, and I guess I'll be in it in some way.
Wow.
And then there's a biography coming out, a new biography on Fred next year, and there will also be, PBS has a few programs planned as special, so it's been a wonderful, wonderful 50 years. I'm still going strong with the program. Well, with the company. The program is on Amazon now.
Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime, and if you have Prime, it's all free. You can download them free. You don't have to. Yeah. You can make your own library. And it's on PBS Kids, and it was on Netflix for a while. I don't know if it still is.
I don't think so,
but,
yeah.
But it was for... Yeah. And just recently, there's an online... And I had never heard of it before. There's an online show they call... Twitch, I think.
Oh, yes.
Do you know that?
So, yeah, Twitch TV,
TV showed all 900 programs in a marathon. They started May 15th, and it ran through June to July.
Yeah.
Around the clock. You could see every program we made. And that... And no one seemed to know about it, because they didn't publicize it, I don't think. And I found out about it because somebody told me it was on. But 7 million people tuned into it. So without being publicized, there's still a lot of interest in what Fred Rogers did with television. And we now have a program called, and you may have heard of it, called Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. You familiar with it? And that's now in all over the country on the public stations, but it's now in 25 countries, too. Around the world. I know it's in Germany, and I had a friend who lives in France, and I saw them last week, And they said, yes, they see Daniel Tiger outside of the city. They live not too far from Paris. And they see what started in Pittsburgh in 1954 as the Children's Corner is now in some way going around the world. So I'm glad to have been a part of all of that legacy, and it's still going.
David, let me ask you, how did you first meet Fred Rogers? How did you get started?
Oh, boy. I'll do the short version. By the way, there's the long version is on NPR Radio. If you want to hear this in its entirety, there's a show on NPR, National Public Radio, called The Moth. I don't know if you've heard of it. And I did a 15-minute story about how I got started on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on The Moth. And they played it already on National Public Radio. But when they play something, then you can go to their web and you can hear it. So if you want to hear the full version, go to The Moth and look for me telling that story. But I was in the summer of 1967, I was in London. And I was visiting my cousin who was working for the Navy. He had been in the Navy, then got out and got a job as a civilian in London. So I went to visit him. And I was there, and I met a friend, and we traveled around Europe for a while, and I was coming back to Pittsburgh to work in a theater. And that was my plans, until I got a telegram from a mutual friend of Fred Rogers and mine, whose name was Bob McCulley, and he said, I've heard that Fred Rogers is expanding the program. They've gotten an offer from Sears Roebuck's Foundation to take the program nationally. It was just regional. And I've given Fred Rogers your name to be interviewed. So that I came back to Pittsburgh. He set up a time for me to meet Fred, and I got the job. He hired me within an hour, and I was, well, fine. This will be great. I'll get the job. And I'll do it for a year, because that's how long they had the funding for a year.
Right.
And then I'll go back to Los Angeles where I was living. So here I am, Speedy Livery. And that's a short version of how I got involved.
When you were hired, what was the job title? What were you hired exactly to do?
I was hired, this is how he hired me. He hired me, and he showed me the scripts, and I was hired to be in charge of all the props. I had to go with production, and I was hired as production coordinator. And I had to go out and find all the props for 130 programs, which is a lot, plus the costumes, plus getting things ready, plus helping Fred behind the scenes with the puppets. And he said, oh, by the way, before you go, I have one more duty for you. I'd like you to play Speedy Delivery. I'd like you to play the delivery man on the program, too. I heard that you had a background in the theater, and so that's what happened. And so he hired me. He gave me the scripts. I got all the props for the first week of programs, and I went out, got in my costume, and was sitting there waiting for our first taping. And the phone rang. And it was Sears Roebuck's Foundation saying, good luck, and we love what you're doing. But they also said, please don't call the delivery man Mr. McCurdy. That's what Fred had as the first, my character's name. Because McCurdy was the president of Sears Roebuck's Foundation who gave the money. And they thought, oh, it might be a little too self-serving. We can't call him, Mr. McCurdy. So please don't do that. So he came out and said, well, we have to get you another name. McFeely. You're now McFeely, because his middle name is Fred McFeely Rogers. And it was a family name. His grandfather, the real Mr. McFeely, was his grandfather. So he said, I'll pay honor to my grandfather. And that's how the name became, and it stuck. So I'm stuck with McFeely. So that's in a nutshell how everything came to be.
You were quite a bit younger than Fred Rogers.
Oh, yeah. I'm about 11 years.
And you were playing a character, though, that was older.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought of it that way. Yes.
Now, yes.
But the rationale behind that was I was younger, but it also gave us a chance because Fred wanted to show a timeline of sorts. So there were films that we would do where I would appear as me, as the younger McFeely. Oh, right. So we had the option of being older or younger.
Yes, yes.
But he, as it went on, I became older. And but we did those flashbacks, he called.
Oh yeah,
for many years, and where we were the younger McFeelys, and then Mrs. McFeely came along, and then a granddaughter came along, and our granddaughter, but not our real granddaughters. And Mrs. McFeely, the actress, was not my real wife. But there's a funny story too. We did a flashback to Mr. and Mrs. McFeely getting married. And we recreated a wedding in a church. And it took us about a day to do this wedding. And my real wife played a bridesmaid as I was marrying Mrs. McFeely.
You know, many of our friends and relatives were in the church.
And I'm narrating it.
Sure nice to have them all there.
I'll show you my real wife in it. Seen this in years. And the minister's an actor from Pittsburgh, and I was in his wedding.
Berta's song was a great way to begin our wedding. I remember even now how nervous I was, but my good friend Jim Gardner was a great help to me.
I look a little younger there.
Betsy's sister Nan came in first.
That's my real wife.
Roses that she grew in her own garden. My nephew Chris carried the ring.
And the little girl is the minister's daughter, the actor. And that's the grandmother of the little girl. And this is Mrs. McFeely, but her name is Betsy Natus. And that, I guess that's her dad. I can't.
Isn't she beautiful?
She sure is. My mother always loved Betsy, even from the time when she was a little girl. In fact, Betsy and I knew each other all the time.
Remember who that was?
Before we got married.
So this, in a way, gave us an advantage to do flashbacks, and that's why that gives them a sampling of it.
That is really neat. I had always wondered about that episode.
Yeah, there was a church that they were tearing. The people who just came in were showing Mr. and Mrs. McFeely's wedding, and we recreated the wedding, and we found an old church outside of Pittsburgh, and it was still intact, and we rented it for about 2 days to set it up, and we got the organ working again. We got cast. I was telling everybody that my wife, my real wife, played a bridesmaid. And a friend of mine, who's an actor, played the minister. And I was in his real wedding. So it was all... It's in Pittsburgh, you know everybody who is in television and acting.
That must have been a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. And we did it. It took us about a day to do it. Now, if you were doing that... in a television studio movie, that might take a week to do that. We did it in a day because every minute counts. You got to pay money to have production. But it was filmed. It wasn't on tape.
Very different than the rest of the episode because of the quality of the film.
Yes. When you film, I don't know how many, the 16 millimeter film, 35 would have been better.
Yeah.
But it was on 16 millimeter, and the quality is much better with film, I think. Has a different look to it. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
It's lusher.
Less frames per second.
Yes, and it has a deeper,
a different
look
depth. And
at any rate, we at the end of this which you haven't seen, we drive off in a 1932 Ford.
Wow.
Which is what we rented for the day. But anyhow, before some of you came in, where they were talking about. Playing Mr. McFeely as a younger person playing an older person. I said the advantage was that we had a chance to do flashbacks like this.
So let's see, any hands, any questions here?
Anybody has any questions? As you're all just babbled, yes. Did you mean when I started, did you think I'd be there that long? Is that what you're saying?
Just to know that something like this is still impacting children today, that they still watch
it. Yes. It really is evergreen. I think it's because of the content. Fred Rogers was he had a background, and he was quite the student of children. He had a background in child development, a background, his degree was in music composition, and he also had a degree in theology. And all of those worked together, and he used them. He wrote his own scripts, too. All the words you hear on Mr. Rogers came from him. There were a few other people who wrote some scripts, but he did, I'd say, 98% of the writing, and the puppets' voices, and the manipulation, and the hosting, and he wrote the music. It was really his concept. It started, by the way, in Pittsburgh in 1954 with a program called the Children's Corner, and it was on for 7 years, 1 hour every day live. So before Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was ever on television, Fred had spent 7 years in television already. So he was a master at communicating to children through television. He knew exactly what to do. It was an instinct, but he also studied children, and he knew what was appropriate for that age. And to think it would still, and I think to answer your question in a way, the subjects that he dealt with are subjects that children of any generation have to go through. And, you know, 50 years from now, some of the stuff, if the tapes still last, 50 years from now, some of the subjects will be the same as you deal with them now. You know, when children learn how to read or to speak, they may be learning a language they may be learning Spanish or German or Italian or whatever, but they're still learning at the same age. It's developmental. And he would approach children's television developmentally, what they're going through at the time. And he also, young children don't separate fantasy and reality. And he did. He thought that was very important for very young children. That's why the neighborhood of make-believe was by itself. That's where anything could happen. That was pretend. That was fantasy. But the beginnings and endings of the program was reality. And he would separate. He said, let's pretend that we're going to go to see Mr. McFeely deliver something to King Fry. And that was set up as pretend. I've got a lot of people here today who are fans of The Incredible Hulk. Mm-hmm. And one day, my daughter, who's now 40, was watching The Incredible Hulk when she was three. She was just watched it when it was on commercial television. And she had nightmares because it scared her. 3 years old, you don't know that that's pretend. Mm-hmm. So I said, Fred, you know what we should do? We should go to the Universal Studios, contact the producers of Incredible Hulk, and go in and watch them make one of their programs to show children that it is pretend. And watch Lou Ferrigno get into his makeup. And we did. Lou came in to the makeup chair, and they watched him put he had a foam forehead and a foam, and then they put green all over it. It's on one of the films.
We took
a picture of that too. But what Fred was doing was demystifying the scary part of that program for young children. A 12-year-old would understand. A 3-year-old might not understand and separate the fantasy and reality. And my daughter had nightmares because she thought it was real. But that's how we use television. My favorite program was the same idea. Adults would tell me, you know, that movie, Wizard of Oz, scared me. I could never watch it as an adult. It still scared people. The Flying Monkeys and the Witch.
Right.
You know, the Wicked Witch. The adults would say, I'm still afraid of that. I close my eyes when the witch comes on. And I said, you know what we should do, Fred, is we should contact the actress, whose name is Margaret Hamilton, and have her come on the program and bring a costume, well, we had one for her, that looked like the one from the movie, the witch's costume, and explain. And she explained it to children, you know, that's my job. I'm an actress and I pretend I'm different people, but I'm not a bad person or a scary person. But here is the laugh that I did when I was in that movie. And she cackled like the witch. She said, but I'm not a bad person. We're pretending. And it demystified some of the scary parts for young children. Now, older kids, when they see it, knows that that witch is an actress. But three-year-olds, four-year-olds don't separate the fantasy from the reality. And Fred thought, that's helpful to do that in television. A lot of television, think of it, they don't do that. A lot of the programs that are represented downstairs, but they're mainly for adults, and adults get it. But young children, I think, need some help in interpreting what's there.
Now, you, when you worked on the show, you didn't just work as a an actor that would clock in and out. No. You worked behind the scenes a lot with Fred, and you traveled with him.
I was there. Every show we made, I was there as an actor or a production coordinator or a PR person. So I was on the set for all 1,200 shows we did. And I'm thinking, if you have any ideas, tell me. I'm trying to write a book that talks about my years working on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Not a children's story book, but a book for the age group that's here.
Right.
People who remember growing up with it or remember their kids growing up with it. Just some of the funny stories that happened. For instance, this is a very contemporary story, or you'll know this person. On the Today Show, I don't know how many watch the Today Show, but at Christmas time, they have people at Christmas come up to the barriers outside and bring toys for children. And leading up to Christmas, they have two celebrity elves that come in and collect toys with Santa bags. And the one year they did it, and I went up with Fred because we were publicizing a book. They had Fred Rogers and, of all people, Henry Kissinger collecting toys. And they put in the bag, hi, Henry, hi, Mr. Rogers. Well, the next year, Fred, that was the year before he passed away. The next year they called and said, do you think you could do it this year, me as Mr. McFeely? I said, sure. So I went up to the studio. They got me a dressing room. They said, now, why don't you get into the costume and come down by 7:30. We're going to start the first round of toy collecting. And we'll introduce you to your celebrity elf partner. I didn't know who it was, and they didn't tell me. So I walked down to the plaza, and they said, Mr. McFeely, meet Donald Trump. And it was Donald Trump. He was there. This is going back to his Your Fired program.
Your friends,
Yeah, he was publicizing.
Right.
And I met him. He was fine. And we went around collecting toys. And they'd say, hi, Donald. They knew me almost better than he at that time. Because he wasn't the President of the United States at that point. But I think he was running. But he was very pleasant. We chatted a little bit. We did three collections of toys. We filled up three or four bags of toys. And then they came to be 9 o'clock and they cut. So, but my point being, stories like that I'd like to include. You know, that's not a child development story, but sort of a funny story.
Yeah.
And then the Margaret Hamilton story I'd like to include. And there's so many different things that I'd like to include in the book, but, you know, it's easier said than done.
Were you with Fred when he met Eddie Murphy?
Yes. Oh, yes. No, this is... I don't know how many of you have ever seen Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood. Well, the first time I saw it, my wife said, David, come on downstairs. Look at this sketch. And we didn't know about it. And they don't have to clear it with you. If they called it Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, they would have to have gotten permission. But if they called it Mr. Robbins' neighborhood, they didn't have to. So Eddie went through whatever it was. It was quite funny. And weeks went by. They became very popular. They must have done 30 of them over the years. But I got a phone call one day from the producer of Saturday Night Live. This was when I was in charge of public relations and still did Mr. McFeely. And they said, do you think Fred would come down to New York and surprise Eddie on the air? They wanted him to start a sketch. They wouldn't tell Fred that Eddie was in the building. They wouldn't tell Eddie that Fred was in the building. And he would knock on the door and be Fred. And Fred, he would never say yeah. I couldn't get him to say yes. Because I think he said, I don't know what Eddie Murphy's going to do. But at any rate, we went up and met him twice. Met Eddie and the writers, and it never did work out. But I think it would have worked. Here's how it would have worked, I think. They could have had Eddie start the sequence. He wouldn't have known that Fred was backstage. There'd be a knock at the door. He'd go to the door. It'd be Fred. And the audience would have gone wild. They could have sung Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood and then go to a commercial. That way it would have worked. But it didn't happen. But so many people saw that. You know, a lot of people knew of Mr. Rogers through Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood. So, but it was my job to handle the public relations too. And and I always tried to get, as I'm telling you now, the separation of fantasy and reality, I always tried to get Fred on an adult program so he could talk about the concept that he was doing. Because it was a much more than a nice little kiddie show. It was that. But it had such depth to it, and all the child development that he would put into it, and communicating, taking this very cold medium and trying to interpret the world for young children is what he tried to do. And he was the real thing. There was no... He really cared about kids and cared about perceptions and wanted to be an honest adult in their life. And there are so many, we got so many letters from children who were latchkey kids who would come home and their one companion until whoever got there later on would be Mr. Rogers. Yeah. There's a lot of stories like that. Yes?
Did you go with him when he spoke to Congress for the funding
guy? Oh, did you see that?
Yeah, we showed the U.S.
Senate. Oh, you saw that? That was in about 1967?
I think it was 67, yeah.
Or around 67 or 68. Okay. It was beyond 67, I think.
Okay.
But were you with him, and did he prepare that ahead of time? Because it seemed like he's just...
Pardon me?
..speaking from the heart. Or was he
really... That was... I don't know if you saw the beginning part of it, but Senator Pastore had heard... They were going to cut the funding to public television. They always are cutting the funding to public television. No matter who's in... The funding goes, but they manage to stay in. They just eke it down every year. But the senator had heard all of these red papers. People made a paper, read it to the senator, and he was sort of bleary-eyed. And Fred, after lunch, they said, Pastore, he said, well, you probably saw it. You know, I've heard, just tell it in your own words, or something like that. And that's what Fred did, and that's what made it so effective, I think. But that was at the top of his head. He was a very bright man, very funny man, too. He had a great sense of humor. And it came out in some of the puppets. King Friday would be funny, I think, and that was Fred's voice. But he was the real thing. There was I was with him on this one, too. When VHS first came out, you could record something on television and then play it. And there was some bill being introduced that you shouldn't be allowed to do that. And they brought Fred down to testify, and he said, you know, I don't care if people tape our programs and show them at home for free. I don't care. I'm making this program to help children, and that's what I'd like to get it around to the widest possible audience. And that was his testimony. Now, other people who sell videos may have a different opinion, but so I was with him with that. He was the real thing. There was no artifice. He meant what he said. He was very direct. But what I liked about him was his sense of humor. He was a very funny man, which didn't come across on television as much as it would if you met him in person. But funny in a subtle way, not funny in, joke-telling, that type of thing.
You spent a lot of time with him outside of the set. Yeah. Did you ever have, do you have any fun stories about any place you went? Or?
Oh, boy, there's so many. One time, he gave me a picture. Fred didn't know actors. He didn't know much about television or movies or the pop culture. That was not his thing. And he brought in a picture that he found that we had taken years ago. And it was a man who was on our show, a dancer, and his girlfriend. And he took it, he forgot about it, and 2 years later, on my desk, he put this picture of these two people. And he labeled it, oh, here's a picture of Jerry Seinfeld and Louise, the actress.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes. Yes. And I said, Fred, no, that's not... They look like they might be, but that's not Louise or Jerry Seinfeld. Because we had met both sets. We met Jerry Seinfeld on the Today Show one time. But no, Fred, that wasn't... And as I told him that, and you have to look this up too, there's a story online now. The Esquire magazine was doing a feature story on him, and the author was with us, as he showed me, and he got the biggest kick out of it. Fred thought that it was Jerry Seinfeld in the picture, and it wasn't. But it's online now. There's back in about 1998, something like that, 99. Esquire did a cover story of all people. Esquire magazine did a cover story on Fred Rogers. It's an excellent story. It's online now. You can read the entire article. But there's so much. And going back to what you said, everything that Fred talked about is still current in a way. I mean, he was up to date. He was really ahead of himself as far as television goes and breaking the fourth wall. And talking directly to the child at home. He was quite a pioneer, and I don't think people understood that. Anyhow.
Questions?
If anybody has any questions, please, yes.
Yes.
Is there ever a script idea or something that he presented that maybe you didn't agree with at the time? Or?
Boy, that was why I think it wasn't me that didn't agree, but we did a week... And this is the most popular, and came through the mail, the most requested topic over the years that parents wanted us to deal with was divorce. This is back in, that's where that segment came
1981.
From. 1981. Because we started off with a marriage that lasted, the McFeelys, and I can explain a little later after that. But so Fred waited 5 years before he did something. Because there were people saying, if you introduce that, kids may have never thought about parents. Now you might put ideas into their head. And he worked it out that he thought it through. He had a lot of consultation with psychologists. It wasn't just opening the camera up and doing shows. But that was one that he decided to do, and some people were uncomfortable with it. And in fact, we got letters saying, my child... Now thinks we're going to get divorced. Thanks a lot. but overall, it was a very successful, helpful program. He did that. He did disabilities. Oh, one time he got we got a letter from a family who had a little girl who was blind. And so from that point on, who loved the program, and from that point on, Fred started to describe things. He said, I'm sitting here, guess what this is? And yeah, you're right, it's an orange ball. And see how it bounces? I'm making this up to give you an example. But he started to describe things as he was showing them to sighted children who could watch. But he would think about the other thing they did too, very subtle. when the program, the kids who are watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood were children who were just learning to read, just learning the alphabet. You read from left to right. So when he came in the door each day, he would go from left to right. Just very subtle. You'd never see that. I said, well, Fred, why can't you enter down the other side of the steps? And Fred said, no, I like to come in from left to right because children learn to read that way. Very subtle things. And if he didn't do that, or probably wouldn't have made a lot of, but if you have the chance, do it. And they did. He thought all the time of what children, he tried to second guess what children might be thinking, what might be concerning them, and help television help that. We hope.
I wanted to ask you about the 2008 film Speedy Delivery. I know you have these at your booth.
Oh, yes.
Everybody, make sure, by the way, to go to your booth later.
Yeah, we're
down
at
your booth all weekend?
I'm here all weekend, yes. I'll be here, and I love to hear stories, and we have pictures, and we have, there's a Speedy Delivery book. It's a children's book. I think you got one.
I looked at it, but I did get the DVD.
Oh, you got the DVD, yes. But and I don't have a huge range of things, but we can make a deal.
Tell me about the making of this DVD, because it's a documentary that seems to cover a short period of time.
Yes.
Right around 2007, I guess.
It did. And the man who came to me, who made the film, was at the time at Carnegie Mellon University doing a postdoctorate degree in filmmaking. And he asked me one day if he could follow me around. So he had an idea for a 10-minute film, he said. And it turned out to be 75 minutes. But by the way, he's from Coral Gables.
Wow.
He grew up in Coral Gables. He now lives in L.A. He's working for Pop Sugar, I think, one of those cables thing. But it is it was a concentrated period of time because he had to do it. And it has me visiting some children's museums. Mr. McFeely interviews Mrs. Rogers and my wife and my two boys and some people I work with, and then it has our dogs in it.
Yes.
But it's just a very, I think, affectionate look at my years working with Fred Rogers, which I just value. I look forward to going to work every day, and there's a saying that's out. You've heard of it. When you pick a job, something like I'm paraphrasing. When you pick a job, be careful what you pick. You know what I'm talking about.
But if you enjoy what you're doing, you never go to work.
Yeah, that's it. If you love your work, you never work a day in your life.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I never worked a day in my life. I mean, sitting here talking to all of you, I enjoy because it's something that I really felt part of. That here was this program, and most television is criticized. You know, most people say, that junky thing, this junky thing. Well, you may not like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. You may like it. But he was at least trying to use television in a positive way, and I felt I was part of that. And it was a joy to go to work. And every time we did something through television, I felt that somebody's benefiting by that. And boy, we could tell immediately from the fan letters we'd get. We had to have somebody, a couple people, go through the fan mail and parcel them all out if it was just, say, can I have your autograph? He signed every letter that ever went out of the building. He would say, no, it's the most important thing we can do is the mail. But if it's just a letter to have your, somebody would write the letter, thank you for the da-da-da, and he would sign it, Fred Rogers. So everything that came through the mail, he saw and signed. It wasn't, five secretaries, but they had to organize it for us. So, and I had to do all the PR for the program, and I met Donald Trump that way, and Margaret Hamilton. Oh, by the way, Margaret Hamilton, who was a wonderful person, she was on the program, but afterwards she became a good friend of my wife and myself. And when our second son was born, Maggie, as we called her, flew in from New York. I picked her up at the airport. She came to our house from the afternoon to see our new son. And she sat there with our three-day-old son on her lap.
Wow.
The Wicked Witch of the West. And then, oh, the phone rang while she was there, and one of our neighbors said, "Did I just see the Wicked Witch of the West came in your kitchen?" I said, "Yes, you did. That's her name's Margaret Hamilton." Well, they, of course, they knew her as the witch more than they knew her name.
Sure.
But she was in so many. Oh, do you ever hear of a comedian whose name is W.C. Fields?
Sure.
Well, he was quite a character, and he was in a. She was in a movie with him. And she came into work one day, this is back in the late 30s, before most of us were born. None of us were born when this movie was made. And she came into work, and Fields came over to her and said, "Maggie, take the day off and take your son to the baseball game. It's his birthday. Take the day off." And stories like that about everybody she worked with. She made so many movies over the years that it was fascinating just to sit back and listen to all of her stories. But it's things like this that I like to put into a book. And we went to the White House. We went to the White House for the Christmas party one time during the Reagan years, and we did a presentation to all of. They brought all of the different countries. Were represented, and all the children of various countries were in their native garb for the Christmas party. And no matter what political persuasion you are, Republican or Democrat, that day is everybody's blended.
Right.
No, there's no politics going on, and it's just spectacular to see this White House. And it was, and we went back for a Bush one too, but this was Nancy Reagan sitting on the floor with Santa Claus watching our little show. And the Santa Claus was the guy on the Today Show, the weatherman.
Hal Roker or Willard Scott?
Willard Scott.
Yeah,
yeah, Willard Scott. Well, Hal Roker became later.
Yeah, yeah.
But all of these stories, then we went to the White House. Fred got an honor. He got the Medal of Freedom.
Freedom. Yeah.
And that was from Bush Jr. And that was, what a day at the White House that was. And Cosby got it the same day. And then we met up with Cosby again. I don't know if he was behaving himself or not, but but nevertheless, Fred, right before he had his operation, the last public appearance he made, we were in the Rose Bowl parade. And he was one of the grand marshals, along with Cosby and Art Linkletter. And then Fred flipped the coin for the Rose Bowl game, and he was so sick. He didn't feel well at all. He was diagnosed with cancer, and I swear he was misdiagnosed. I think they thought it was a bad ulcer, but nevertheless, about 3 days later, he was in the hospital operation. Then he spent 3 weeks, and he died February 27th, 2003. So it was literally about 6 weeks after that parade. And that was the last appearance he made.
Yeah.
But he was a trooper, and he fulfilled what he had to do. He said, "No, I'll go." And so we got him to the parade. He didn't want, if he could have gotten out of it easily, he would have, but he didn't want to. He was a man of his word. If he told you something, he would do it. You knew. He always said, "The truth shall make you free." And he lived by that. He was quite a person. He was. I've never met anybody who had such strong faith. He was truly had strong faith and a genuinely kind, funny, good man. I'm rattling on, so just ask me.
That's good to hear. Let's see if there's any more questions. We have just a few more minutes.
Well, do we? Oh my goodness, it's gone fast.
Yeah.
If you have any thought about anything, Just ask it, yes.
He asked about Fred Rogers, why you thought that they thought he had an ulcer.
I don't know if I'm... I may be...
You believe that they didn't diagnose it as quick
I
as
think
they could.
That could be. It's more that. Yeah. I think it originally, because I think he was complaining about stomach upset. He came to our house once for dinner about 5 months before he passed away. And my wife made, he was a vegetarian, as I am, and she made lentil soup. And somehow the lentil soup irritated his stomach, he said afterwards. And I don't think at that point, and I think they thought it was an ulcer.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they knew the... I don't know.
And it's one of those that you never know, but if they had diagnosed it earlier, who knows what could happen.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? But at any rate, and I think I became a vegetarian because of Fred Rogers. He was long before I became vegetarian. And I'm not a vegan, but I don't eat any kind of meat. And he didn't either. But when we were out on shoots, we go to remotes, and everybody else, the crew, would go to McDonald's, maybe, and we'd find a restaurant that served vegetarian. And I'd go with him because I was in charge of making sure he had everything he needed and so forth. And he couldn't walk 2 feet without being stopped.
Oh, sure.
And he would stop, and he would talk to everybody. He was... And he was so thoughtful that he kept a little pocket diary, a calendar. And everybody, his close friends, everybody who worked for him, their birthday and anniversary was in his pocket. And he would call people or send a card on their birthdays. And there was somebody who was working for us, a husband and wife who were working on a film for us. And Fred sent them a happy birthday, happy anniversary wish. And they forgot it was their anniversary, but he remembered. So that's the kind of person he was. So I guess the next group is coming in, right?
We still got a couple minutes. I have one more question. I wanted to ask you about the handshake on the last episode, and then I wanted to show the clip for everybody. So
we're gonna I'll set this up. This is the last week of programs we taped, and we did a speedy delivery song, and as I left, we did this so many times over the year. Oh, I'll see you around the neighborhood, whatever. And this time, though, I just wanted for myself, I shook his hand because I knew this would be the last time we would be doing this sequence. And so we'll show it, and you'll see where I shake his hand. You're gonna show
it was, but it was your extra little thing you wanted for yourself.
Yes, for myself.
Because in that episode, he never says this is the last episode.
No.
He says, you know, it's just like any other episode.
Yes.
So I'm going to show...
it's not long. It's about 3 minutes.
Yeah, I'll just show you the segment here. Let's see where you come to the door here. You had the music.
There's with Marcellus.
And then it was right after this he sung...
Art in itself, Mr. McFeely.
Well, I like making all kinds of pictures. I did this with a video camera.
Oh, it's just beautiful the way you wove all of those forms of art together.
Well, I thought you'd enjoy it.
I certainly did.
I have more deliveries to do right now, but before I go, I want you to always remember, if there's anything you want, if there's anything you need, McFeely's Delivery brings it to you here with speed. Yes, our speedy delivery is a speedy delivery. A speedy delivery to you, speedy delivery.
Oh, I love your song, Mr. McFeely. Do you think that our neighbor and I could sing it with you?
You can all join in if you like.
There's anything you want, if there's anything you need, Feely's Delivery brings it to you here with speed. Yes, our speedy delivery is a speedy delivery. Speedy delivery to you.
Speedy delivery, see you around the neighborhood.
Thank you.
That was wonderful.
That was our last week of programs that we did original. That was the last week of how you say that, the last...
Full episodes.
Full episode, new episodes.
Yeah,
and then they're still on, they're on Amazon, they're on PBS Kids, and they're all over YouTube. So you can see Mr. Rogers, still see Mr. Rogers whenever you want to. And then we have a new show called Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. Did I mention that? I did.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And people could check that out. And I, the episode I saw, your voice was at the end of it.
Oh, yes, yes.
Rattling off.
I did this program is brought to you by, those. So if you all be down at our booth, we're right in that autograph alley, what they over there call it. And I'm right next to The Walking Dead.
So go down and check them out. Everybody, Mr. David Newell.
So drop down and say hello.